It's not liberal. It's not conservative. It's progressive. The truth that empowers. Right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network. Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, a special in-depth investigative report on the Quackbusters, those individuals who've taken it upon themselves to challenge those of us who hold alternative points of view on health, the environment, and other issues. Also today, a special commentary, a short commentary from Chris Hedges, The Empire Strikes Back from Truthdig. Also today, a longer commentary from John Whitehead from Counterpunch, Uncomfortable Truths You Will Not Hear from the Presidential Candidates. Today also, a short commentary on what millennials should know before they vote for the candidates that are leading and what they're not going to see if these people are elected, no matter what they're told. Also, time permitting today, the Bill of Rights and what it means to the people voting for Hillary Clinton. You'll see what I'm talking about. And I found a scientist who represented a group of scientists who were doing some work on brain cancer and cannabis, the cannabinoid oils in the brain. And it's very important. It's a short clip. It's only about a minute and a half. But some really important and impressive research they've done with this. Also, if time permits, the former CIA officer's secret life undercover in the CIA taught her one lesson. Listen to your enemy, and I'll share her point of view. I don't think I'll have time for talk back, but that's all right, because this evening, following the Progressive Commentary Hour, I'm beginning, after 5 years nearly, my new talk back live, 8 to 9 p.m., and I'll give you some information during the show in case you want to not call in on the phone, which you'll be able to, but if you want to text or email, we'll be able to get to the issues. There's no guests, no commentary, just me responding to your issues for the hour. Very empowering hour, I'm sure. It was always a lot of fun doing it for 30 years. And also, it's time that we knew the truth about Syria from people who have been or are now in Syria. I just got off the phone with someone who had just come back, is in Lebanon. We have three outstanding experts on the ground in Syria, and their story of what they're seeing, completely different than what you would read in the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, or hear from the White House or State Department. The truth about Syria, 1 hour, hard-hitting, as all the Progressive Commentary Hours are. So you see, we have a lot to share. But we always start with something on health and healing. I'm just going to make it a little abbreviated today because of trying to get the other things in. Those burgers aren't just making us fat. They're messing with our immune system also. This is from Lucy Goldchild Van Hilton, Alternet. A junk food diet is clearly not healthy. That we know. Burgers widen our waistlines, raise our cholesterol levels, and tighten our arteries. But scientists now think that even before it shows up as additional pounds on the scale, junk food is changing our bodies in other surprising ways. It's actually a form of malnutrition that could be making our immune systems attack our own bodies. In a recent study published in the Journal of Immunology, scientists in Australia's University of New South Wales investigated a typical Western diet. That's one that's high in saturated and monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. Specifically, they looked at the diet's impact on immune cells called T lymphocytes or T cells. The researchers in this case, in this lab, fed a high-fat diet for 9 weeks to see what effect it would have on the T cells. And the result surprised study leader. Quote, despite our hypothesis that T cell response and capacity to eliminate invading pathogens would be weakened, we actually saw the opposite. The percentage of overactive T cells increased. Now that, hold on a second. So you give a bad diet and a part of your immune system increases. The average person says, good, isn't that good? No, it is not good. It's very bad. Why? Because having more T cells doesn't necessarily mean your immune system is stronger. In fact, when the immune system goes into overdrive, it can attack healthy parts of the body, resulting in autoimmune diseases like type 1 diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis and inflammatory bowel disease and lupus. See, the cell membranes, the bags that hold cells together, are made up of layers of fatty lipid molecules. Looking closely at the T cells, the scientists found that having extra fat in the diet actually changed the amount of lipid molecules in the cell membrane, which in turn, quote, changes the structure of the cell, altering responses to the T cells and change the immune response. Now, in lay language, what does that mean? Well, what it means is you no longer have a normal immune system. It means that your immune system can then turn on itself. Recently, I completed a major, and I believe we will find very shortly, from the results, and I don't tabulate the results. With all my more than 40 clinical studies on lifestyle and behavior modification, all the results are collected. The journals that people collect are write in are collected. All their blood work up, blood pressure, impedance is all collected and given to an outside independent statistical expert, a medical biostatistician. They compile everything, and then once it's all done, then I get a copy. But from the feedback I got that day, listening to people's exit statements that we videotaped, hundreds and hundreds, people said, I no longer have stuffy nose. I no longer wake up at night. I no longer have high PSAs with my prostate. I no longer have the same cancer markers. I no longer have migraines. I've lost weight. I feel more energized. I feel calmer. People who had been chronically depressed and chronically anxious and were on meds, their doctors took them off the meds. They were feeling fine. Now, that is anecdotal. It's when you see the actual data that you can come to a decision. But one of the things we did see is autoimmune conditions changed dramatically. Bloating, gas, distension, pain after meals. Here's what happens. Let's say you have a hamburger, as they're suggesting. And with hamburger, you get a bun. Well, there's your acrylamide, the browning of the bun that creates a very pro-inflammatory food. The burger to cook it, so it kills off most of the pathogen, that creates heterocyclic amines. The two together are both known carcinogens. Now you eat that, and what happens is in the intestine, large particles that will start to get into the bloodstream, and many people have leaky gut. That immediately trips your T cells, phagocytes. A whole lot of immune responders go to work. They don't know that that's just an improper digestion. You weren't chewing your food properly. You were drinking a beverage with it. Your stomach didn't have a chance to really digest it. Break it all down to about the consistency of a milkshake. Instead, it dumped a lot of the food from the stomach into the intestines, and the intestines can't finish all that digestion. That's not an immune reaction. So what happens is you start eating the same way every day, and most people do. They have the same food. They eat the same way. Then every day you're triggering your immune response. That's not good. This study is showing that you're putting those burgers and fries and the fat from those burgers and fries into the body, and that's stimulating extra T cells, and that's causing a hyper-diligent or over-diligent immune response. That's like turning on a fire alarm and leaving it on 24/7. And hence, more people are going to be more susceptible to illnesses by a weakened immune system because, quite simply, you're burning out your immune system. You're overusing it. And that's not good. Now, separately from trends in immunology, a new article I read this morning, like your fingerprints, every single person's immune system is different. Now, we've been led to believe that we're all the same. We all have the same immune response. We do not have the same immune response. And what this study done at the Translational Immunological Laboratory in Belgium showed that we inherit unique set of genes that help us respond to infections. And studies have found that our history and environment, like where and with whom we live, are responsible for up to 80% of the differences between individuals' immune systems. And that's a big deal, quote from the study. Just like it took a while to crack the genetic code, we're finally starting to crack the immune code, and we're shifting away from the simplistic idea that there's only one type of immune system. Diversity isn't just programmed into our genes, it emerges from how our genes respond to the environment. And then here it's showing how if you've had a long-term infection, let's say you've had herpes, or you've had mycoplasma, or you've had some form of bacteria or Coxsackie virus, and you live with it, that's not good for your immune system, because a lot of other viruses and pathogens can get into your system because your immune system has been weakened. The longer you have a chronic infection, the weaker your immune system, the more susceptible you are. And that is why, with all programs, including the one that people just went through, the first month was detoxification, cleansing the body of heavy metals, lead, cadmium, mercury, being able to help repair DNA, being able to stimulate a cleanse of the colon and intestines, getting that debris through, reestablishing a healthy colony of good bacteria, which then communicate 100 billion good bacteria, the probiota in the intestine, communicate with other bacteria in the body, including the brain. Which means that anytime you're in an environment, your immune system will try to adapt to that environment. But if you're in a negative environment, a toxic environment, you're going to have a more stressed immune system. Hence, clean food, clean liquids like soups, juices, water, a clean exterior environment like woods, streams, ocean, rivers, flowers, gardens, grass, walking barefoot, all of those, believe it or not, enhance a healthy immune response. So the longer you can spend in nature, the healthier your food, the cleaner your food, the more plant-based your food, the better your immune system. Therefore, even if you should have an infection, a virus, the body's better able to deal with that virus and keep other viruses and bacteria from invading you. And the older you get, the weaker your immune system. And that's why so many older people succumb to infections. And this shows you how your immune system is not one size fits all. So everything you do, everything you engage in, will create a healthier or weakened immune response. So healthy diet, healthy immune system. And also one of those superfoods, ACAI, or ACAI, it's pronounced both ways, according to University of Reading, here's what it does, and this was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, quote, adding one pulp, which would be a half a cup, to your smoothies, that's a powder, improves vascular function and supports healthier heart. Quote, consuming this plant-based smoothie with high-fat breakfast led to 1.4% improvement in flow-mediated dilation. That's terrific. A measure of blood flow and vascular health compared to the placebo. There was also an improvement in reduction of cardiovascular events by 13%. Wow. Quote, to our knowledge, this trial is the first well-controlled acute intervention study in humans that shows actual benefits from consumption of the fruit with the use of well-validated biomarker of cardiovascular disease risk as an endpoint. So in lay language, this was a double-blind, randomized crossover study with placebo, and so those that had this fruit had better heart, better vascular system. And that is the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment with a special report. Please stay with us. Stations around the United States, people in Canada, all around the world listening, I welcome you to this station and to this program. Please share the information. Now, I'm going to give you a new phone number to add to the other phone numbers because we had a tremendous amount of people downloading Friday's program. As many people may know, our Friday program was taken away without comment, without discussion, without any input, and that's fine. The station manager has the right to do what they want with a program, and I'm told that there may be more days taken away, which is fine. They have a right to do what they want, but for that little station. But fortunately, I control and own the Progressive Radio Network, the number one liberal and the number one progressive station in the world, and what we do for that little station is a gift to help them because I've been there 40 years. And we will continue to in spite of their treatment of this audience. But if you ever turn on and you can't get on Friday at noon, I'll give you a phone number you can call. And I'm giving you multiple phone numbers. Keep them all because sometimes there's so many people wanting to listen over the phone live that it requires another number. So we have these rollovers. Here's this new number. Write it down, please. 641-793-7091. 641-793-7091. Believe it or not, 99% of the people listen to this radio program listen at night, downloading it. And you can listen over a computer or you can listen by telephone. You can actually access our archives by telephone. Let me give you the number. And by the way, we just were notified we're number one in the world, in the entire world, of all the thousands of radio station service using this. That's how many people are downloading our show. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Now for our environmental segment. This is from The Washington Post, Todd Frankel, and it's about Africa's cobalt pipeline, where your mobile phone starts and tracing the path from deadly hand-dug mines in the Congo to consumers' phones and laptops. I'll quote this. The sun was rising over one of the richest mineral deposits on Earth, in one of the poorest countries on Earth. This cobalt miner was in the red dirt savanna stretching outside his door, and this contains such an astonishing wealth of cobalt and other minerals that a geologist once described it as a unique place. This remote landscape in southern Africa lies at the heart of the world's mad scramble for cheap cobalt, a mineral essential to the rechargeable lithium-ion batteries that power smartphones and laptops and electric vehicles made by companies such as Apple and Samsung and major automobile makers. But this worker, 35 years old, knew nothing about his role in this sprawling global supply chain. He grabbed his metal shovel and broken-headed hammer from a corner of the room he shares with his wife and child. He pulled on a dust-stained jacket, a proud man. He likes to wear a button-down shirt even to mine, and he planned a mine by hand all day and through the night. He would nap in the underground tunnels. No industrial tools, not even a hard hat. The risk of a cave-in is constant. Quote, do you have enough money to buy flour today?" he asked his wife. She did. But now a debt collector stood at the door. The family owed money for salt. Flour would have to wait. He tried to reassure his wife. He said goodbye to his son. Then he slung his shovel over his shoulder, and it was time to go to work. The world's soaring demand for cobalt is at times met by workers, including children, who labor in harsh and dangerous conditions. An estimated 100,000 cobalt miners in the Congo use hand tools to dig hundreds of feet underground with little oversight and few safety measures. According to the workers, government officials, in evidence found by the Washington Post during a visit to remote mines, death and injuries are common. And the mining activity exposes local communities to levels of toxic metals that appear to be linked to ailments that include breathing problems, birth defects, and this is according to the health officials. The Washington Post traced this cobalt pipeline and for the first time showed how cobalt mined in these harsh conditions ends up in popular consumer products. It moves from small-scale Congolese mines to a single Chinese company, Kongdong Feng International Mining, part of one of the world's biggest cobalt producers, and that for years has supplied some of the world's largest battery makers. They, in turn, have produced the batteries found inside products such as Apple's iPhones, a finding that calls into question corporate assertions that they are capable of monitoring their supply chains for human rights, abuses, or child labor. Apple, in response to questions from the Post, acknowledged that this cobalt has made its way into its batteries. The California-based tech giant said that an estimated 20% of the cobalt it uses comes from this particular area. And another customer, one of the world's leading battery makers, told the Post it stopped buying Congo-sourced minerals last year. And Samsung, another large battery maker, said that it is conducting an internal investigation, but that, quote, to the best of our knowledge, the company does use cobalt mined in Congo, but it doesn't come from that company. Few companies regularly track where their cobalt comes from. Okay, and then it goes on from there. I'd like to share my own thoughts on this. I'm just completing a major documentary on the planet and what's happened to the planet. And I'll give you a brief overview. Right now, we have at least 30 tipping points. 1/4 of those have tipped, meaning nothing we're going to do will reverse the outcome. But there are things we can do that can lessen, slow down some of the other tipping points. But it depends upon several factors. For global warming, for the acidification of the oceans, for the dead zones in the oceans, some of which are as large as the state of New Jersey, the mouth of the Mississippi, millions upon and even billions of fish that go into these dead zones have no oxygen, they die. To the bleaching of the coral, including the Great Barrier Reef right off Australia, what you're seeing is you're seeing a domino effect. You're seeing the Arctic melt, you're seeing glaciers melt, you're seeing Greenland melt faster than ever before. Plus you're seeing on land, water, and air, air that's so polluted in China, one area of China loses over 1 million people a year because of the coal dust. And yet it's never discussed. You see more coal-burning fire plants being brought in to existence. And yet with all these conferences that are given a great deal of publicity and lots of environmentalists who go and with good intentions try to do something about the environment, nothing gets done, not in the United States, and rarely in other countries as well. Because those people in power are choosing to keep as much profit as they can for themselves. Their goal is maximizing the return on investment. Also enriching themselves if they run a company. Now, could they help this poor miner in Africa so he could buy salt and flour? Yes. Could they give them tools that could make it easier? Could they give them safety helmets and actually create tunnels that would not put them at risk. Yes, they could. And that would take a tiny fraction of their profits away, tiny. But they choose not to put anything back. These people, meaning the major corporations, do not look at the human equation. If they did, then why have so many been found guilty, from banks to car makers, of knowing, and drug makers and sugar makers, knowing the product they're making could undermine health. And yet they look at the cost of doing business. We create a drug, we make $22 billion. We pay a $1 billion to $5 billion fine. We net $17 billion, that's good business. No one will go to jail because we control the system. We have lobbyists everywhere. Those lobbyists protect us. And indeed they do. When was last time the head of a bank, one of the big ones, that was responsible for the collapse of our economy, and then was bailed out, when did they go to jail? When were they disgraced? When did they have to do a perp walk? They haven't. In fact, we criticize Donald Trump, and rightly so for a lot of reasons, but the very fact that he took a $1 billion loss and then amortized that loss on a forward basis against his profits, we act as if he was the only person doing it. He was not. Hundreds of major corporations have done the same thing. And those people have also donated to the Clinton Foundation. So I would suggest that if we're going to be condemning one person for doing something because it's wrong, condemn everyone. So the next time we go to use our cell phone or iPad or turn on the flat screen TV or to get into our car with all of its unique gadgets and apparatuses and technology, shouldn't we bear some responsibility for this constant consuming to ask, where does it come from? Will it impact the oceans, the water, the land, the earth, its resources, the trees, the minerals, the people who live there? And the answer is always, yes, it will. Then the question is, do we care? Of course some people care, but only a minority. I'm guesstimating maybe 5 to 10%. That means the vast majority of people do not care. They don't care where their meat comes from, how it was raised. They don't care where the elements in their cell phone comes from. They don't care. They don't care about the plastic going in the ocean. But they're going to be angry if they go to their beach and when they go in the water, there's plastic in the water where they're at, or there's algae so they can't go into it because of global warming. So if anything, I think that this report from the Washington Post should give us a moment to reflect upon a consumerist capitalist society that offers no solutions and takes no responsibility against what we should be nurturing the earth, caring for each other. But those are just my thoughts. Now, we're going to hear from Julian Assange in a unique discussion about what we have not understood about the leaks that he's given up to this point, leaks to come tomorrow, I'm told, and but to hear it directly from him in a unique interview. Please listen.
Within the past 48 hours, U.S. Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton took to the stage in Las Vegas for a rally on the very same day of the largest hacking convention in the world, DEFCON 24, in the same city. Amidst cries of being hacked by the Russian government, the Clinton campaign has been hit by FBI investigations, the resignation of DNC chairperson Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and calls for the imprisonment of Hillary Clinton herself. This all due to the WikiLeak of thousands of personal emails from Clinton's account, separate to the one she should have been using on U.S. State Department servers. But could there be more that could put the presidential candidate behind bars? I'm Afshin Ratansi. This is Going Underground, outside the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been arbitrarily detained by the British government for 4 years. We asked Julian Assange whether he has the email that could put Hillary Clinton in prison and talk about whether the next leak could change the outcome of the U.S. presidential election. That's all coming up in today's special edition of Going Underground. Julian Assange, thanks for agreeing for this interview. Aren't you worried that you're on this channel, RT, after being accused by Hillary Clinton, basically, of working for the Russian government? We know Russian intelligence agencies hacked into the DNC. WikiLeaks is now publishing all the hacked emails.
I don't think WikiLeaks can be constantly worried about PR. I've been called a Mossad agent. It got so bad, in fact, that the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, had to put out a press release denying that I was a Mossad agent. I'm not sure, actually, that that's particularly helpful. A cat torturer, a CIA agent, etc. So it's expected with our publications. Russia has been brought up by Hillary Clinton most recently, just a few days ago, on Fox. So I think it is necessary to address what WikiLeaks feels is its perception of its own publication to the RT audience. Everyone accepts that the emails that we have published, the 20,000 DNC leak emails, are completely accurate. So no one is saying, no, I didn't say that in this email, it's a fabrication, etc. That's accepted. It's not surprising that it's accepted because WikiLeaks has a 10-year publishing record where we have never got it wrong. Now, that's an impressive business. It's also why we take a while to publish what we have, because we want to keep that perfect record. Now, given that the real source is known, in this case, it is the DNC, it is Debbie Wasserman Schultz, it is the Louis Miranda, the head of communications. We know they are the original source. So there's a quite a difficulty in the Clinton campaign to try and outmaneuver the publication. So the content itself is unquestionable, so instead you have to bring in some other actor. So the actor that they've tried to bring in is the Russian intelligence services.
Hillary Clinton just said, we know Russian intelligence agencies hacked into the DNC, we know they arranged for emails to be released.
Yeah, so on the, actually she has a slight variant on the we know. I don't think she says emails, I think she says some documents. Because the difference here is that do state actors hack the political organizations of different countries? Does the United States government do it? Absolutely. Of course, it hacks the political parties of many different countries. Does French intelligence, Chinese intelligence, Russian intelligence hack political parties in order to collect intelligence? Yes. Did they hack the DNC? Has at least one state actor hacked the DNC? If you read very carefully, they say it's been hacked many times over the last 2 years. And our sources say that the DNC security is like Swiss cheese. The DNI, the Director of National Intelligence of the United States, several months ago said that both the RNC, the Republicans, and the DNC were being attacked by a range of actors, from philosophical opponents to states engaged in espionage. Now, the head of the DNI, James Clapper, who's responsible for all US intelligence agencies, he's the boss of the boss of the CIA. If anyone knows what US intelligence agencies knows, he knows. And on Friday, he had to come out and say that there's a lot of media hyperventilation, that they have no idea as to what motivation is, even if they did know who it was. So that's the head of the DNI dampening down ideas that they know who it is. Now, this is a separate question to the release of our emails. So in the US media, there's been a deliberate conflation between DNC leaks, which is what we've been publishing, and DNC hacks of the US Democratic Party, which have occurred over the last 2 years by their own admission a number of times. I think this statement by Hillary Clinton on Fox really does need to be tackled because it concerns us directly in our publications. What she is attempting to do is to conflate our publication of pristine emails. No one in the Democratic Party argues that even a single email is not completely valid. It hasn't been done. And the head of the DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, has rolled as a result. And whatever hacking has occurred of the DNC or other political organizations in the United States by a range of actors. Now, in the middle, we have something which is the publication by other media organizations of information purportedly from the DNC, and it seems to be the case. So that's a series of Word documents and PDFs published by The Hill, by Gawker, by The Smoking Gun. This is a completely separate batch of documents compared to the 20,000 pristine emails that we released. In this batch of documents released by these other media organizations, there are claims that in the metadata, there's someone's done a document to PDF conversion, and that in some cases, the documents, the language of the computer that was used for that conversion was Russian. Okay, so that's the circumstantial evidence that some Russian was involved, or someone who wanted to make it look like a Russian was involved with these other media organizations. That's not the case for the material that we released.
Any Russian connections between Hillary Clinton and Russia? Any Russian connections there?
Hillary Clinton has done quite well strategically to try and draw connection between Trump and Russia because she has so many connections of her own. Now, my analysis of Trump and Russia is that there is no substantial connection. Why do I say that? Well, because Trump was trying to invest in Russia before Putin in the 1990s, after Putin, in fact, nearly all the way up to the present moment. And he's had no success. He did not manage to build hotels and so on in Russia. So that shows how insubstantial his contacts are. There's an extremely well-documented pattern of when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, those people, companies, governments, who wanted a decision by the Secretary of State in their favor, making large donations to the Clinton Foundation, or in some other cases, business deals with the people around Hillary Clinton. Now, one particular instance is the approval by Secretary Clinton of selling 20% of the US uranium reprocessing rights to a Russian company to be exported to Russia. So at that time, a large donation was made by those Russian interests to the Clinton Foundation. In addition, Clinton's campaign manager, Podesta, was on the board of a company called Juul Unlimited. And Juul Unlimited held some of these rights and received a $35 million investment from Russia.
And that's a Russian government company.
And also, Russians were on the board also with Podesta.
So the kind of email revelations from WikiLeaks reveal that Hillary Clinton is a Kremlin stooge.
I wouldn't say Kremlin stooge, but there is a much deeper connection on record with Hillary Clinton and Russia than we are presently aware of with Donald Trump.
Well, some journalists would argue that it's actually the subject of the revelations that's more interesting to the American voter about the election, while the media, of course, is fascinated about whether the Kremlin is working with you, whether you work for the Kremlin, basically.
No, but it's very... I think it's a genuine question. You should ask the sources of information. The least, however, in the case of WikiLeaks publications. Why do I say that? Well, the principal reason why you want to know the source of some statement is to understand whether it's true or not. It is a big issue in the case of other media organizations who are simply making claims and not publishing original documents. I'll give you an example, a very, very interesting example. I've done some research on the Turkish coup. Okay. Now, it's not spoken about in the West, but within Turkey, the Turkish newspapers publishing elements of a theory that the United States was directly involved in the coup. The US intelligence backed Fethi Gulen, who's based in Pennsylvania, as the head of the Gulen cult that has been implicated in the coup. In fact, according to the Turkish government, is the leading actor in the coup.
He's wanted by President Erdogan.
Yes, and they've put out an extradition request and so on. But one of the key independent points of evidence, not coming from an interrogation in Turkey where people might have been placed under duress, is that in the middle of the coup, NBC published that Erdogan was on his way to Germany to seek asylum. And they say this was told to them by a US military source. So what the hell is going on there? Because that went all the way around the world and was used to used to further the chance of the success of the coup within Turkey, because if the president has fled, then he's lost control.
NBC, a close supporter, so Trump supporters would say, of Hillary Clinton. So would a Hillary Clinton presidency endanger the NATO alliance and the ability to store American nuclear weapons at Incirlik Air Base and use it as a base to bomb Iraq and Syria under Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think either government is potentially a problem because of, I mean, that coup was in Turkey very serious business. Hundreds of people have died. About 100,000 people have been fired or arrested in the post-coup purge, in a opportunistically in some cases of political enemies of Erdogan, in other cases trying to purge the society of the Gulen movement.
Because the Clinton Foundation's major donors include members of the Gulen movement that Erdogan says were responsible for the attempted coup d'etat.
Right, so I mean, Erdogan's going to look at that and treat Clinton suspiciously. But I mean, you know, regardless of who becomes president of the United States, you have an extremely large bureaucracy, intelligence bureaucracy, that has its own mind in things. So he's going to look, unless Trump is elected and engages in a significant purge of the CIA, for example, I think Erdogan will continue to view it very suspiciously, especially as long as we've got Feta Gulen being protected in Pennsylvania.
Julian Assange, thanks. We'll have more from Julian just after this break. So back to the democratic process in the United States. Basically, the first batch you released showed, and obviously we did have, at least you've got to admire Wasserman Schultz for resigning very quickly after your emails were released, after the WikiLeaks publication, there was a dirty tricks campaign against Bernie Sanders. So Democratic primary voters didn't really understand what was going on during that process.
So go back. Hillary loses the election. He loses the primary process against Obama. At that point, Tim Kaine was the head of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. Debbie Wasserman Schultz was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager. So then some kind of deal is done whereby Debbie Wasserman Schultz becomes the head of the DNC and Tim Kaine steps down. Now, if you're Hillary and you're thinking strategically that you're going to run again in 4 years or 8 years, to have your campaign manager as head of the DNC, controller of the, if you like, the regulator who's regulating the nomination competition, is a huge strategic advantage. Okay, so that now let's wind forward, and the 20,000 DNC leak emails that we released. Okay, so they're from Debbie Wasserman Schultz, head of the DNC, and six other prominent people, finance, communications, and so on. And so what they show is that within the DNC, there was a unity of the most senior people, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz, to act against Bernie Sanders in the nomination process and for Hillary Clinton. Now, in what particular actions were performed? Well, there's a lot of discussions. There's so discussions about we can use a captive reporter and push out the fact that Bernie Sanders might be an atheist and not a Jew, and this is going to cost him in the South. And where MSNBC on its most influential morning program, Morning Joe, was defending Bernie Sanders. Then Debbie Wasserman Schultz called up the president of MSNBC. Amazingly, this is not reported in the US media. It is reported in the US media that they called up Chuck Todd, who's the host of Meet the Press. Okay. Something much more serious is not reported, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz herself personally called up the president of MSNBC to apply pressure in relation to positive coverage about Bernie Sanders on Morning Joe, their big morning TV program. Okay. Then to my mind, what is the most serious from an evidentiary point of view? It is the communications director, Louis Miranda, making an instruction to his staff to pump out a black propaganda story against Bernie Sanders, saying that his supporters were violent, and to put this out in a, quote, unattributable, unquote, manner. Why do I say that is the most serious? Because it is an instruction given through the chain of command to staff. It's not a discussion. It's not any one person calling up the another person. And it is to depict Bernie Sanders supporters as violent. So that is not just a critique. That is not just to give Sanders a break here or make things a little bit harder for him there. It is to demonize a Democrat in the eyes of the public. So the Democratic Party demonizing a Democrat in the eyes of the public through covert means.
Well, there is no way, presumably, Hillary Clinton can win if there is a link between Hillary Clinton and ISIS-Daesh. Now, I know your WikiLeaks is reviewing all these different emails. You have so many of them, and you need to look at them and who they can damage, who they can't, all sorts of things WikiLeaks does before releasing them. President Obama is now bombing ISIS-Daesh positions in Libya, so it's reported. Did Hillary Clinton use Libya as a conduit to sell arms to ISIS-Daesh in Syria?
The US government, at the time that Hillary Clinton was in charge of foreign policy, did use Libya as a conduit to get arms to jihadists in Syria. That's well established, not just by a range of our materials, but by the investigative work of Cy Hirsch and a variety of other investigative reporters in the United States, some of those even published in the New York Times.
And any of the emails, I mean, you have mentioned that Libya comes up in so many of the emails that you've been releasing.
As regards Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State. In the batch of 32,000 emails we released a few months back, there are 1,700 in relation to Libya. So it, including, I suppose that the most useful one is which is colloquially referred to as Hillary Clinton's Libya brag sheet. So she was documenting all the ways in which she led the invasion of Libya in a political and, to a degree, an organizational sense. So pushing it within the US government, bringing in the European partners, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
Even going there herself personally.
Anything to add to reports that, according to the French papers, the big French industrial conglomerate Lafarge, which has been donating money to the Clinton Foundation, and has got the reports in the French press were it was sending, it was relating funds with the ISIS-Daesh. Any information, any emails that connect up Hillary Clinton to ISIS-Daesh through Lafarge?
Well, most of this work was done by Le Monde, so that's the New York Times equivalent of France. And so what they show is that Lafarge, which is a giant, amongst other things, a giant concrete company, transnational concrete company, was involved in Syria. There's interestingly, more than 350 Lafarge-related emails in our Syria emails release. So that's 2 million emails that we published about Syria, including the personal emails of the President Bashar al-Assad. And so the investigation by Le Monde reveals that that they paid ISIS Daesh money, taxes, if you will, for their operations in certain areas. They engage in a variety of business deals.
We're waiting.
Hillary Clinton's involvement is that money from Lafarge in 2015 and 2016 went to Hillary Clinton Foundation. So that's recent. Now, you ask, well, why does it go to Hillary Clinton Foundation? Actually, there's a long-term relationship between Lafarge and Hillary Clinton. She was a member of the board, for example.
That's you expect that, I know you can't comment directly about the pending email releases from WikiLeaks, but you expect more about the Clinton Foundation?
Yes.
I have to also get to Yemen, because Saudi Arabia does crop up in some of the emails you've already released. 20 million people now facing humanitarian disaster. Clinton Foundation mentions to... there was no mention of the Clinton Foundation at the DNC conference, noticeably, at all, about the good works it does. Do you think part of it is that connection to Saudi Arabia, let alone the 28 pages of connection of 9/11 to Saudi Arabia? What is the connection between Hillary Clinton and Saudi Arabia that certainly got Israel angry?
Well, it's extensive. I mean, the relationships between Hillary Clinton and Saudi Arabia, between the Clinton Foundation and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is probably the largest single donor to the Clinton Foundation. You can see Clinton's arms export policies, why she was Secretary of State, favoring extensively Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, William Binney, the whistleblower who's been on our show, says that the NSA can easily get access to all these emails. So if there is illegality in the pending emails of your release, or malfeasance in the ones you've already released, President Obama could presumably act on it and get Hillary Clinton charged, regardless of whether you're about to release an email, which would mean that James Comey of the FBI would have no alternative but to arrest Hillary Clinton.
Well, our view, which we have already stated, is that if the evidence that the FBI has is enough for a grand jury to indict already. That's not hard. It's actually saying that a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich if you're instructed to do so.
Exactly.
But, which I'm having, because I have a grand jury myself,
against
a federal
you.
Grand jury in Washington, D.C., I'm well aware of what they're like. But the prosecutor has to ask the grand jury to indict. And the prosecutor doesn't ask, the grand jury won't indict. So that's the basic problem.
Do you believe she can win, given the emails you've so far not
released?
Can
she win the election? That's an interesting question. I wouldn't be willing to say so far.
And just one last question, away from the US presidential elections. It's 5 years since Mark Duggan was shot to death by British police. Of course, Black Lives Matter in the United States has come to the fore partly because of evidence of gained via technology, mobile phone footage. What message would you have for Black Lives Matter, both in the United States and here in Britain?
Well, it's transparency. I mean, the transparency in relation to DNC leak, which took the head of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, head of the Democratic Party, that came from us presenting to the public pristine, original documentation of what people were doing. And the Black Lives Matter movement has come up, yes, by hard work for activists, but the core of what is driving it footage that is undeniable, that everyone, it's not a matter of the, you know, do you believe the police, do you believe the friends of the person who was shot, the witnesses. No, there's undeniable footage of exactly what has occurred, and that is
not only stimulating parts of the black community. I think the black community has understood this for all too long, actually. But it's stimulating enormous acceptance and sympathy outside the black community because their argument is proven.
Julian Assange, thank you.
You're welcome.
We contacted the Pentagon about the allegation made by Julian Assange, but they did not issue a statement. As for Lafarge, they did not get back to us in time for broadcast.
Well, that's it for this special edition of Going Underground. We'll bring you the latest emails published by WikiLeaks as and when they come. See you on Monday.
Very informative. And I guess in the next 24 to 48 hours, we'll be seeing how much of this will have an impact upon the candidates. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program.